Hey all, it's Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you about our good friends over at Burger Master. If you know anything about me, I crave burgers in my sleep. I do not mess around. Started in 1952, Burger Master is the best burger chain in Washington State. They have locations all over the Puget Sound in Aurora, Bellevue, Everett, Mill Creek, University, and Mount Vernon. Their fresh ingredients and classic drive-in experience make them the greatest burger chain in the state of Washington. Stop by Burger Master on your way home from a Seahawks game. You won't regret it.
Hey everybody, it's Brian. If you haven't noticed, it is absolutely nuts out there in the housing market. If you don't know exactly what you're doing and you don't have someone that you trust by your side to guide you through the process, good luck getting the home you want or getting the best price for the home you're selling. John Hurlbut at Altitude Homes is a guy I've known for years, over a decade, a friend and someone I trust implicitly. If you are in Pierce, South King, or Thurston counties, there is nobody better to help guide you through the real estate process right now. Go on over to altitudehomesteam.com/hawkblogger. Now, again, that's altitudehomesteam.com/hawkblogger. Sign up to contact John. He will help you with the process, and all referrals will result in a $1,000 donation from John and the Altitude Homes team to Ben's Fund. Everybody wins. Go in there, get your help, get your dream home, get the most money for your home. AltitudeHomesTeam.com/HawkBlogger.
Hey all, Evan Hill here of Real Hawk Talk. Super excited to talk to you guys about our good friend Blake Johnson of ManifestFit.com. Football season is quickly approaching, and it is a struggle to stay in shape while eating burgers and nachos. ManifestFit.com is your one, only true online personal training service with workout and nutrition programs specifically based on your needs. They work with clients all over the U.S., and what makes Blake and ManifestFit.com so unique is that they don't believe training should be a luxury item. Now's the time to start. Head over to ManifestFit.com, click on how to join, and fill out the form. Their team will get back to you ASAP and help you start building a healthier, happier, louder Seahawks fan.
The skyline is etched in my veins. You can never put that out, no matter how hard it rains.
Hello and welcome to the 257th episode of Real Hawk Talk. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me on Twitter at HawkBlogger. And I'm joined tonight by Dana O'Gorman at Dana OG on Twitter. And Dana, we are 2 weeks away, 2 weeks away from like the moment we've been waiting for. Honestly, I would say almost like for 10 years, because when's the last time there was this much reason to be hopeful and excited, truly, that the CX team could get significantly better. And literally, 2 weeks from right now, the Seahawks will have at least one new player, and probably by now, two new players, depending on how fast the draft's going in the round. Who knows? Maybe they'll have three new players if they do something crazy. Dana, we have a lot to talk about. I am too excited to host tonight. So I'm going to ask you to actually keep us on track and guide us through this conversation. But first of all, how's it going? How's life?
It's good. Yeah, Kansas City is getting revved up for this draft. Like, it's crazy what is going on downtown right now. They've shut down roads and they're building it. Almost looks like an amusement park. I don't know what the hell they're doing, but they're scaffolding everywhere. And it's crazy down in front of our Union Station. It's just, which is a beautiful, beautiful old building. And so it's going to be gorgeous. It'll be a fun draft. So I'm excited about that. Just like I just told you, I just got confirmation of my press pass. So I'm super excited that I'll get to go interview some of these players, even though the list that came out, I was kind of surprised there was only 17 names on it, but it'll be nice to go to meet these new players and chat with them. But you know, it's been really interesting. And yes, I am happy to host at the same time with just the two of us. It's going to be kind of more conversational. I'm really excited about that. I'm sad that the other boys couldn't make it, but this is the off season. That's, you know, kind of what happens. But I think that what's going to be really interesting over the next couple of weeks, and I'm sure we're going to talk about this, is the up and down of the players, the you know, rising of the stock, the lowering of the stock, the trash talk, you know, from the agents, oh, my player is better than this player. It's so funny because it's already started. It's already built up. You know, Jalen Carter hit the floor and now he's rising back up again. And now all of a sudden everyone's mad at CJ Stroud, which is crazy to me. So I think that's really kind of the fun part for me over the next few weeks is to see how the ebb and flow of that happens. So,
well, you remember, I know you remember, not everyone on that's watching may remember or listening, but you being at the draft last year was a pretty great experience. And specifically, I always remember that everybody around you was so excited about Kenneth Walker getting picked. Mm-hmm. And you came out of that saying, like, I think we got a real one. And you and everyone else there was absolutely right.
Yeah, it was crazy. The reaction from what I saw from Seahawks fans on Twitter was the exact opposite of what was happening in the room around me. And I love that because it gives, you know, an kind of an out of fandom, you know, look at a pick. And everyone is like, oh, the Seahawks just stole that kid. I mean, they were just so excited about it. So that was really fun. And it turned out to be right. Thank God. Yeah. Knock on wood, you know, whatever. If it turned out to be a bust, poor Nathan's head would have exploded by now. So, you know, it's good. It turned out to be, it's a lot of fun. And it's a lot of fun to chat with, you know, other reporters and their thoughts and getting their ideas on players and how other teams are doing. I learned a lot about the opinions of the media of about certain teams and how they change and vary so very much. So it's a lot of fun, but I am really excited. But before we get to draft stuff, is it okay if we talk just a minute about Sherman's latest podcast? Yeah. So I don't know if most people have probably seen the clips right now. God knows Quandre puts them out there. I love Quandre Diggs. Richard Sherman had Quandre Diggs on his podcast. It was a fascinating conversation between the two of them because a couple of things happened. First of all, he told the great story about that Pete ran through the whiteboard. I'm sure you guys have seen that clip where the night before the Denver game, he was so amped up and wanted to do it. So he ran through a whiteboard, which had Sherman just flabbergasted. But it was interesting to see Quandre's perspective of Seattle and Seattle as a team. He basically said, he wanted to come here. He wanted to come here mostly because of Earl Thomas, who is one of his idols, which a lot of great things to say about Earl. And what the Legion of Boom was and how that really drew him in as a college player. And then he talked about the differences between the two teams and how Detroit was no fun and how you came to Seattle was totally different. That made me happy as a fan because that was the reputation of Seattle for so long. It was like the fun place to be and everyone would come here. But we kind of thought that had, you know, waned a bit over the last few years, that it just wasn't quite there. And to know that it is still there and that the players are still so excited to be there, it was really fun to kind of listen to his perspective on that. And Sherman wasn't snarky at all, which I was totally waiting for him to be snarky about Seattle one way or another. But that was it was a really good interview. The other thing, and I think that you'll find this interesting, unless you probably already know this, but Sherman went on for a little bit about how he really hoped Seattle went back to their old scheme, that they needed to get simpler. They didn't need to make it complicated. And yes, he went on and on about how, you know, teams said, oh, we had it figured out and it was too basic, but they still couldn't stop it even when it was basic, and how he really hoped that. And I wrote it down. He says he didn't want the younger players like Tariq to have to overthink it, to just play their part. And I thought that was really interesting because I know a lot of people have kind of commented about that lately.
It is interesting. I'm curious, what did Quandre say?
He agreed completely.
Really?
Yeah, he did. Well, I mean, is he going to argue with Sherman on his own podcast? I don't know, but he did agree on the show.
Yeah, I think that the frustrating part there is the Seahawks did stick with that defense for a long time after it was not working for a long time. And one of the real confounding decisions to make, and this is a Pete Carroll level decision, this is a head coach level decision, and it's a decision that a lot of leaders struggle with in these kinds of situations, not just coaches, but you can stick with the same thing and keep that constant, keep the scheme constant, and realize that you need a tremendous amount of talent in order to be good at it. And that no scheme is going to hide that. But if you stick with it and stick with it and stick with it, and teams not only are taking advantage of your lack of talent, but they're taking advantage of the fact that they know how simple that defense is and they know how to beat it because they know Seattle, and Seattle's so repetitive. Mm-hmm. At some point, you're like, well, do we have to try something else in order to see if we can get more out of the talent we have? Or maybe there's a way. Part of the reason the Seahawks really jumped out with that scheme when Pete came in is they were playing a different defense than what was really being played a lot in the NFL. They were playing different players within that defense, tall corners. They had the Earl Cam kind of connection. So they had this different approach, and then the league kind of caught up. And so it's tough because you look at other teams, you look at where Gus Bradley went and he took that defense with him. You would look at Dan Quinn and he took the defense with him, and those haven't really worked out very well. Dan Quinn has done great, but he's done great partially because he's moved away from that defense. So it is really hard to change. And now I feel like the Seahawks potentially are in this no man's land where Pete is not an expert in the defense that they're now currently. I mean, he's an expert on any defense, but this is not his Bud Grant based, like super knows the every in and out, every counter move. And so I think they don't have the expert in the building, and they also haven't had the talent. So it is a question. I think it's a totally legit question about whether, and there's different parts of it, Dana. There's the 3-4 versus 4-3 mm-hmm. part. There is the three deep, like the single high safety versus two deep safety. That's a separate part. You can mix and match these things, but I am really curious, and when we get into talking about the top 30 visits, there are some interesting clues in there about who's visiting that I think signal which direction this is going.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, we can, I just didn't understand because Sherman, that was probably what he was comfortable in. It worked for him. So he's, right. You know, has like kind of a soft spot for that. And, you know, and maybe, you know, that's why he says that. I don't know, but we'll, I think what a lot of people are noticing is that last year just wasn't working. And that could be from talent. That could be, you know, from scheme. It could be a mix mm-hmm. of a whole bunch of things, injury, all that stuff. And so I think that's probably where he's leaning. He's like, no, it worked for us. We won a Super Bowl, you know, sort of a thing. So it was a great conversation.
I'm curious, Dana, how much do you buy into the fact that like Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman, you know, Byron Maxwell, Brandon Browner, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Bruce Irvin, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, Brandon Mebane, would they have worked in any scheme, or were they really dependent on this type of scheme in order to excel?
I don't think so. Although we did see some of those players when they left not do as well.
Right.
That is true. Here's what I really think it is. If you really want to know what my opinion is, I think that was a lightning in a bottle. And I say that all the time. I think you had the perfect players in the perfect scheme playing with each other, that chemistry and that complete combination of talent and different ways to communicate and all the stuff that they did. I always say it was a historic defense for a reason. It's not going to happen again. And so you, even though it was super simple defense, it worked perfectly for the people who were on the field at the time. Yeah. And I don't think that can be repeated, maybe to a certain extent, but that the level of perfection, and I do use that word perfection, that defense was, I think it was the perfect magic potion for it all to come together and work.
Yeah. I think the likelihood that the Seahawks are going to get a scheme advantage the way that they had, I think, a scheme advantage initially when they ran that defense is super low.
Yeah.
The chances that Pete is going to find with Clint Hurt and whoever else, the players to fit this new scheme, and that they'll be great, and that they can be great, even though it's a different scheme, I think is possible. So it's, honestly, it's a conundrum. I could go multiple different directions on this particular decision, and I'm sure the Seahawks have. The absolute truth, it doesn't matter, is you got to have talent. Mm-hmm. Whatever scheme you're playing, you've got to have blue chip, dominant talent that other teams have to deal with. And frankly, they didn't have the right guys. They didn't have the right level of talent, and they didn't have the right talent for the system they were running last year. And they were kind of like all over the place trying to figure out what to do. So it was almost everything was not the way you want it last year.
It was a disaster. You can just say it.
Yeah. Pretty much the opposite of everything we talked about that was good with the Legion mm-hmm. of Boom. So yeah, they've got to start by just getting more talent, no doubt.
Yeah, they have to. So another interesting part to kind of segue into that of the podcast, Sherman and Quandre talked about who they wanted for Seattle to pick at number five. And mm-hmm. I thought that this one was really interesting because both of them straight out the gate were like, we want that boy from Bama. Like they want Will Anderson. But they're like, if he's not there, you have to go with the guy from Georgia. And they said Jalen Carter, and that's who they want. Now, granted, these are defensive boys having a conversation, right? And so I agreed wholeheartedly with them. But at the same time, I know that other people think differently, but they had a really good take on Jalen Carter. And Quandre was saying that, yes, he has had some problems but he really thought you get him in Seattle, you get him around Bobby, you get him around Quandre, you get him around, you know, Cliff and Cam and Sherm that all come back all the time, you know, KJ, you get him around those and you teach him how to be a professional. I don't know if they think that's their job or not, but that's what Quandre was saying. And then Sherman threw in that Seattle had learned their lesson about Malik. And so they weren't going to let him leave Seattle. They're going to get him an apartment across the street from VMAC and have security walk him over every day for class. Like, it was a really cute little bit. But I found it interesting that they're like the talents there. It's the player's job to teach him how to be a vet. I thought that was a really interesting take.
This is the question of the draft, Dana. Mm-hmm. This is going to be, we are not going to know what happens until the words come out of the mouth. Technically we'll probably find out from a tweet somewhere, but
I won't.
I think that there is increasing confidence from folks that not just like pundits, but people that have watched these players play on the field that are somewhat independent. I'm talking about guys that follow the SEC. I'm talking about coaches. I'm talking about former players who pretty consistently are like, Jalen Carter is the real deal on the field. Like, this guy has, I was listening to an interview on Brock and Salk with a guy, I think his name is David Pollack. I might be getting the last name wrong, but mm-hmm. he works for for College Game Day. He used to work for the SEC or follow the SEC and cover the SEC. And he said, Jalen Carter has traits that there maybe haven't been guys that have these traits in the last decade. He's like, wow. He was like, this guy is Chris Jones. This guy is Jeffrey Simmons, and not the real Jeff Simmons on this podcast, but the one in Tennessee that just got a big old bag of money. And he's like, this guy is going to be dominant within a year or two. Like, he will be one of the best interior defensive linemen in the NFL. And I think that seems to be a pretty consistent point of view now. Mm-hmm. But even this guy, when asked, like, but how's his football character? Does he love playing football? Forget the off-field stuff.
Right.
Does he love playing football? And he had to pause. And he's like, well, I think him playing for Pete Carroll would be great. And, you know, I'm telling you, Dana, I could be like 100% all in on Jalen Carter. The fact that that's a question dramatically reduces the chances he will be a Seahawk.
Right.
Not because I don't want him, but that is not, like, how many players have the Seahawks drafted that have questions about how much they love playing the game?
Mm-hmm.
Not off field, but on field.
Right.
So that, like, it's stressful, Dana, because it's,
It makes you wonder what type of conversations they had, like with him, with his visit, right? They brought him out for a reason. They wanted to talk to him for a reason. They needed to get their hands on this kid and say, okay, what happened at your pro day? You know, what about all these rumors? You know, why is it, you know, seems to be well known that you take plays off, you know? And so having those conversations, and honest to God, maybe the kid just thought he could coast through college ball and still be great because he's so talented, you know, but at the same time, do you want that on your team? I don't know, right? Like the talent is there. It's no question, right? Insane talent. And like you said, just taking the off the field stuff away, is the motor there? Is he going to be a guy who just phones it in? Because that just can't happen in the pros. He's going to go in the top 10. There's no question about it. Someone's going to take him. Whether or not he decides, you know, to go forward from that, I don't know. He'll probably be good for a couple of years if he doesn't, you know, peter out at that point. But I will say this. I do think that probably what happened to him off the field, which I think teams were hearing more about him now too, because teams know that there's not going to be some legal issues. He's going to be able to play, like all of that stuff. I think it is possible that situation hopefully woke him up a little bit and realized this could all be gone tomorrow. You never know. You never know what's going to motivate someone. And I think that's what those team visits are for. They had to talk to him. And of course, we'll never know how it went. You know,
I think, it is. I'll go this far, Dana. I will say I was surprised that they brought him out.
Really?
Not because, yeah, not like, if I'm just being very honest, when I saw that, I got a little excited. I was like, okay, so they're still considering this guy. That's the level of concern I had, that this guy just wasn't even an option for them. I think that his pro, I'm not even talking about the off field. I'm not even talking about the rumors about motivation, but his pro day performance.
Oh, disaster.
I don't think you could have done something that would be more antithetical to the way Pete Carroll and John Schneider look for someone. Mm-hmm. And not even finish. Well, if he had bad scores, I think that's more explainable. For him to not finish drills and to show up overweight.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, are they going to even think about this guy? Mm-hmm. And so the fact that they brought him out, I was thinking, okay, this is still a possibility. And I'm curious from your perspective, knowing all these things, what do you think he would have to say? What would he have to do? Cause they can't work him out. What would he have to do in that meeting to convince them it was worth the risk?
You know, it's as simple as explain himself. And granted, explain himself without his agent telling him how to explain himself. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not looking for a used car salesman and the agent here, right? And his agent is very well respected. I'm not trying to diss his agent, but I'm just saying that they needed, and you know, that's the great thing about Pete Carroll for sure and John Schneider. They seem to have a pretty good like feel for players. Not always. We know there's been hiccups for sure, but they seem to have a pretty good feel. And because once bitten, twice shy, right? Like they're going to be extra careful with him, that I think that he would have had to sat down and say, listen, this is what happened. And I am mortified. And I promise you, I will do better, whatever it is in their hours long conversations that they have. But I think just something valid of what the hell happened. And then maybe they can go forward from there. But I too, because we saw so many people on Twitter saying he's not even on their board. Nope, they wrote him right off. This proved that's obviously not true. So,
yeah, you could say it's a smokescreen. I don't think there's a reason for it to be a smokescreen. I don't think they'd waste a visit on it. I don't think they need to do anything like that. There was a lot of talk about, hey, he's restricting himself to only top 10 visits. He's only going to the top 10 teams, and why that's really silly for a lot of reasons. But there's also some rumors that the Bears are not going to let him go by number nine if he were to fall that far, and that's the only reason Rosenhaus, his agent, would restrict that. And that seems right to me that they probably do that. I also would bet Drew Rosenhaus has really been working on how this guy has to show up. And this is the most cynical perspective, Dana. Felt like there was a limit of how many times Jalen Carter could pull it off and wants his rehearsal to be like only for the ones that he can manage. Doesn't want to have another off performance. So anyway,
we're going to kick ourselves in the ass if he's good and the Seattle doesn't take him. Oh God, that is just
what would it be comparable to? Like, Creed Humphrey is the one we always talk about. I don't know if it's the same though. Creed Humphrey was such a clean read. This guy's not.
Right. It's fair.
You know, I look back, I'd have to look back at some other drafts, but.
Well, let's say DK and Seattle did end up with him, but how many other teams passed on him because of what they heard and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, it's not the same. He performed well, everything, but you know what I mean? Like Seattle actually came out on the winning end of that one.
Yeah. It's going to be. Will you be more concerned if they call his name or if they pass on him and he goes to some other team?
If they pass on him.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, I think I'll be like, because I don't know who they would take after that unless Will Anderson is sitting there. And I thought Wilson, then some guy completely ripped me apart on the internet because he's like, Tyree Wilson is terrible for this team, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, sorry. But it was like, okay, but now we're hearing that other teams are more interested. And this is the fun part. Oh, I heard that the Bears aren't going to let him get past 9. I heard that Arizona is going to, you know, take Wilson. That's the fun of all of it. So.
Well, yeah. And the other, you said, you know, I don't know who else they would take. Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing that's come out this week was, I think this was Matt Miller at ESPN talking to GMs. And the rumor he's hearing is if both the defensive linemen, Anderson and Carter, are gone, that Devin Weatherspoon, the cornerback, is a player that the Seahawks really like. And that would be really interesting, Dana. Like we talked last week about the fact that Schneider's draft history, he's never drafted a cornerback before the third round. They've had a lot of success in the fourth round and later. And there's so many good corners in this draft. There's Corey Trice. Like there's guys all the way, like there'll be later rounds that have really interesting profiles. It would be a massive departure for them to go cornerback at number 5 or even number 7 or whatever like that. But man, if they're that excited about a cornerback and you pair him with Tariq Woolen, that's a pretty big deal too. So I found myself a little bit excited about that. I don't know if it's real, but that might be where they go if they don't go with Carter.
Mm-hmm. I did read that too. And Witherspoon, for those you know who don't know, he's 5'11", he's out of Illinois. All the things they say about him, he feels very Seahawky, is that a word? I'm not really sure. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that the draft guide that I use is my friend Emery Hunt's draft guide, and he has him ranked number one cornerback for field. He breaks them up in the different different categories and stuff, and he really likes him too. And I read that too, that there's a lot of buzz about him. I think that would fall flat with the fan base a little bit. Do you know what I mean? I mean, those who know and are excited to get him, and that would be great. But I would think that the fan base would be like, really? That's not what we need. We need the line.
Give me your top three in order about what you think the fan base would be most excited about.
Oh, Will Anderson will just make everyone's head explode.
You think Will Anderson would be the consensus first?
Okay. Yeah, I think number two. I think that's where you start to split, and that's when the fan bases start to split. So there's the Jalen Carter defensive line, that sort of level. And then there's those people who want a quarterback if you can't get Will Anderson. Yep. And so from what I can tell, it's literally kind of split down the middle. Of course, I'm going defense. I want Jalen Carter instead, if I could have that over a quarterback. Third, I mean, if for some crazy reason both Anderson and Carter are gone, I would assume they'd trade. That's mine. But if there is a quarterback sitting there and it's one of those top quarterbacks, although I heard something very interesting today I was going to ask you about, maybe you have to take one of them if they're sitting there. If CJ Stroud is sitting there, maybe you have to. I don't know.
Well, this isn't my list of who I would be most excited about, but I think my read of the fan base in general, at least the Twitter version of the fan base, is there'd be the most excitement if they took Will Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
The second would be Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
And the third would be probably Jalen Carter.
Yeah.
It gets although real there's going to be some groups that's really against that. There's a lot of folks that don't want that to happen. So if it gets below that, like, it's possible. I don't know if people would be that upset about Devin Witherspoon. I think there'd be people that'd be pretty excited about it.
I mean, still defense, so that's good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But man, it's going to be fascinating. It's going to be fascinating. What did you hear about quarterback?
It was interesting today. I listened to SiriusXM NFL Radio Tune from work, and they were having a conversation on Moving the Chains today about this quarterback class. And one of them, I can't remember which one, made the comment that he had been saying pretty much all draft season, that this class didn't really have a lot of round one talent level quarterbacks, that it just had a lot of quarterback needy teams. So they become round one level talent, and that he really didn't feel that the talent in this class was as big as people were making it. And that then they get built into a conversation about some of these quarterbacks that you could get, you know, literally rounds 5 through 7 that might make just as much of an impact as some of these other guys. It was fascinating because I don't pay attention to quarterbacks, I don't care. But it was very interesting, some of the names that they were kind of throwing around down there, and they're like, you'll get him in the 6th and he could sit on your bench for 2 years and be amazing. So I thought that was interesting, that if these big quarterbacks that everyone wants, and, you know, Anthony Richardson wrote that letter today that he put out there for Players Tribune. It's a very interesting letter. It was very good for him. But, you know, these big quarterbacks that we know these teams are going to take, but what gem could you find later? And so it was a really interesting conversation.
I mean, I've talked about this a little bit, but like, I know there's very strong feelings about Anthony Richardson, and I know that people aren't happy that I'm not a big fan, and
it really bugs some people that you don't.
It is. I don't mind. I mean, I just am always going to be honest about my perspective, and it's not that I'm blind to it. I understand. If I was going to make the case for Anthony Richardson, I would say he is the most talented player, the most talented athlete in this entire draft. So his ceiling is ridiculously high. There's no doubt about it. And I see that. I get it. I think that he seems like not only a great guy, he seems like a smart guy. He's a great athlete. So there's a lot of things to work with there that could be really cool. And I get, you could have him sitting behind Geno Smith and developing and learning from a super smart guy. All that makes sense. If I were to bet, I don't think he's going to be a great quarterback. That's part of my, I don't see that in him. I see potential. I don't see a high likelihood to reach that potential. And so I compare him to a guy like Dorian Thompson-Robinson of UCLA, who, very different player from a, you know, height, weight perspective, but you're still talking about an exceptional athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Actually had the strongest arm strength, at least from a velocity perspective, of any quarterback at the combine. Terrific leader. I think has a lot of really interesting traits. You could probably get him in the 5th round.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is a similar case to be made. And people get frustrated about that. I'm like, well, but it's the same. Great athlete, great leader, great tools. But I only have to spend a 5th round pick to roll the dice there. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work out, no big deal. If you roll the dice with that 5th pick and it doesn't work out for quarterback specifically,
mm-hmm.
most of the time, Dana, you've lost 4 years of your franchise chasing after, like, figuring that out. And
well, the exact position that the Patriots and Jets are in right now.
Yeah.
Right. And so you spent that high pick, you got this quarterback, doesn't work out, and now you're having to pay Aaron Rodgers $60 million. Like, it's just a bad idea.
And there's not a lot of Aaron Rodgers level guys that just happen to be available when you need them in those situations. So anyway, it's just the opportunity cost for me. And if you're talking about CJ Stroud, I feel a little different. Then I could actually get behind that. I don't think he's going to be there at five. I don't think the Seahawks are going to have that opportunity. Bryce Young, I think, can be a good quarterback. I think he's that height thing. I know that other people are like, don't worry about it.
Well, it's not just the height. He also is like 185 pounds. There's some issues there.
Yeah, I do wonder about, like, I'm not ready to commit him to him as a franchise quarterback for my team. But CJ Stroud's a guy that has enough things that I could get excited about that. It's just, man, I would rather gamble with some of these guys in the fifth round and then come back and maybe come back next year and try again. And just keep kind of reloading in that regard. Meanwhile, build up the rest of your roster, because Dana, this roster is pretty bare still. It needs a lot of talent at positions outside of quarterback. The longer you wait to get that rookie quarterback, the longer that you have a chance to actually benefit from that whole rookie deal. So I know I'm a broken record. I know people are excited about Anthony Richardson.
You should be. He's a great athlete. It doesn't mean that he's going to be the fit at that spot. And I honestly don't think he'll be there. I think there's too many other teams that are high on him. And so I don't think he'll sit there. But at the same time, I get why people get excited about young quarterbacks. I totally get it. And I understand why people maybe aren't as excited about Geno, which I don't agree with, but I kind of understand maybe where that headspace is. I just don't think it's the time. I think that you need another year. There'll be more good college quarterbacks coming out. This isn't the end all be all draft, you know?
Yeah. And look, there's folks that are going to be super frustrated about this and are just all in. I will say that not only do I just feel differently this year, I think the Seahawks do too. You could be yelling at me or Dana all you want. I think the chances that Seahawks go quarterback at five is super low. In fact, I've put up $500 to say I don't think they're going to draft a quarterback at five. Yeah. And I know you put some money bucks, there too. So like it, by the way, if you haven't gone to patreon.com/hawkblogger and signed up to get to the Slack channel, you should, because you can get in on this action. There are folks that have put up money that they are going to draft a quarterback. We are putting up money that they are not. And whoever loses will pay that total to charity. So good time to do that right now.
Yes. And press the like button, please, people. That would be awesome. All right. So this is something you said you wanted to talk about. You said in our chat, you're like, I really want to talk about this. And so I'm dying to know who you're thinking of, because you must be thinking of a couple of players if you want to talk about this so bad. So you said you wanted to talk about players that maybe teams think differently of than maybe the mock drafters think, either good or bad. I wasn't really sure which way you were leaning, but maybe there's some players that are either, you know, going under the radar or maybe getting too hyped. Well, what were you thinking?
Part of what's going on here, Dana, is I have heard from a number of folks that there is a perception that mock drafts are more inaccurate this year than they've been for a long time.
Really?
That NFL teams are like, I don't understand what's coming out there. I think part of that is because things like the PFF mock draft simulator that we've used, or the Draft Network's mock draft, they're based off of those organizations or those sites' rankings, and they affect the draft every time. There's players available at weird times. And so I think you're seeing NFL teams feel differently about some of these prospects, which got me to start thinking, like, who are the guys that the teams could feel differently about? And I think you have to start with the quarterbacks. And I don't know, like, for geeky people out there, you think about error bars, like what's the highest they potentially could go and the lowest they could potentially go, and the farther away, the larger the bar is. And I think that a guy like Will Levis is probably near the top of that list. There's a lot of drafts. We've been talking about him, like, pretty much clearly a top 10, top five guy. There are some folks that have him going in the second round. I mean, I think that's, we've seen quarterbacks slip. We heard all last year, even though there was, I think, much, much less quarterback talent than we have this year. First quarterback taken wasn't taken until the 20s. You didn't have Malik Willis, didn't go forever. People were waiting for that to happen. I think that could happen again. I actually think Dorian Thompson-Robinson's another good example of that. Like, that's a guy that if you go by PFF rankings, they basically have him as an undrafted free agent, like not drafted. Like, they think he's essentially, it wouldn't shock me if some team takes him in the third round. Like, he could be all the way up there for some teams. I think there's some other guys that are interesting in this regard, Dana. I think there's been some rumor that that teams don't like the receivers in this draft as much as we're seeing. So Jeff and I both have been not super high on Quentin Johnston out of TCU. He could go really high or much lower. I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba is pretty safe, like, to be a high draft pick. Tyree Wilson, another name that wide variance. There's teams that there are people that have them getting drafted number two or number three in the draft, and others having them in the 20s. So I think there's a few of these guys that have pretty wide variance. I think Nolan Smith is on there. I'll tell you, Dana, like, I've been on this guy for a little while now. I think two guys, Will McDonald and Kalijah Kancey, they could go. It would not shock me all of a sudden if Will McDonald goes top 15, and a lot of people have him in the second round. I think Kalijah Kancey, there's a lot of people that say, yeah, maybe he's in the 20s. He could go in the top 10. He could also go in the second round. Like, it's a pretty wide variance on some of these guys. So I just think that we're going to see some surprises. One other guy I'll bring up there is Adi out of Northwestern. And I personally, I'm not as high on him as others. I'd love to see extra draft him, but he's like a late second round pick in my mind. There's a lot of people that are mocking him in the first round. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how some of these players play out, but there could be some surprises, especially that affect the 20th pick for the Seahawks. Or if they trade back from that pick, the 37th pick. I think it'll start to kind of round out after that, but there's some names we've talked about a lot that might not get called until day two. So it's just going to be really, it's going to be fun to see that play out.
Well, yeah, I think it's just unexpected. You know, there's a lot of years where you almost know who the first five are going to be. Last year was kind of a good example of that. You just kind of know. Now, the first round pick last year was a little bit of a surprise, but it was just, you know, you really expected, you know, to kind of, you knew who was going to go. But this year, it does seem a lot more of a crapshoot. You know that, you know, Carolina is taking a quarterback. People can talk all day long that the Texans aren't going to take a quarterback. They are. They're going to take a quarterback at two. I can almost guarantee.
I hope you're right.
I can't. I mean, from everything that I have read and heard, and that they're just obsessed with Bryce Young, and they're hoping to God that the Panthers don't take Bryce Young. Which I don't know if that's such a good idea, but I'm just going to let that be. You know, Arizona, if they're smart, they're going to trade out, which then who comes up? And I was said earlier in our group chat, you know, Atlanta has spent a lot of money in free agency. They are literally only missing one piece. Could they be the team that pops up to get a quarterback at this point? So I think that there's a lot, could be really fun, that flex that goes on even before Seattle picks their first one. And then definitely between 5 and 20, there's going to be, the way it falls out is going to just be fascinating. And I think that we will have an idea if there's a player that kind of falls, Seattle might stick at 20, or they might just trade out of it and said, you know what, we can pick everyone of us out, you know, from the 20 or from second round back. So it'll be interesting. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun draft room. I'm excited to watch those. I love to watch the videos of the draft rooms, you know, the different teams. So we'll see.
One more excited player, just I forgot that I wanted to bring up on this that has a wide variance is Lucas Van Ness. So this is an edge player. Dana, this is one of the more odd ones. He has some amazing tape where you see him just push, like, plow guys into the backfield on the edge. He also never was a starter.
Mm-hmm.
So when do you have a guy that didn't even start getting some conversation as a top 10 pick? I don't think there's many examples of that. So, you know, I think that's not a guy I think is a great fit for Seattle. There's a lot of teams, like a lot of mocks that have him going to Seattle. I don't think that's a great fit.
Yeah, It's weird. Should we talk about some of these guys that have shown up in Seattle, and then we can take some Patreon questions? So I have my little list here. Please forgive me. So obviously Jalen Carter has been in. We talked about that just a little bit either, earlier. DeJuan Jones out of Ohio State came in. Tackle. You're going to hear a lot. There's a lot of offensive linemen on this list. I was pretty surprised. Oh my goodness. I'm going to butcher this name. So it's Adebawor, I think is how you say it.
Yeah, that's Adiadi.
Out of Northwestern. Ringo, Trenton Simpson, Jamie Robinson, Tyler Steen, Byron Young, Jartavius Martin from Illinois. One right wide receiver. The one wide receiver was Charlie Jones out of Purdue. Good for you, Charlie Jones.
I love Charlie Jones.
Do you really?
Yes. So this is a player we haven't talked about a lot, Dana. What I think the Seahawks need from a receiver right now, they've got DK, they've got Tyler, they're great, but they haven't had the slot receiver who can get open on third down, who can be sneaky in a zone, find open spots, be a good, reliable receiver, and be smart enough to work with Geno to make there's on those third down plays, on those zone plays, the quarterback has to be thinking in sync with the receiver to break the right direction or bad things happen. Charlie Jones is that guy. He is like the Julian Edelman type slot receiver that is just smart, shifty. He's not your deep threat or anything like that, but man, I think he would be a home run addition, and you could probably get him in the fourth round, maybe the fifth round. You know, he's not a big dude, but I think that would be a great, great ad.
Yeah. Nick Herbig out of Wisconsin. Oh my gosh. Edge rusher out of him. Jordan McFadden from Clemson. Braden Daniels from Utah. Yaya Diaby. I just love the name. Yeah, it's fantastic. Anthony Bradford from LSU. Jake Andrews from Troy. And Little School. God, I love Little Schools. Robert Cooper from Florida State. Jordan Howden, Drake Thomas, Calvin Avery, and Jarek Reed II. Handful of edge rushers, obviously, but a lot of offensive linemen. And I think more than anything, it's really been interesting is that these are later round guys. These aren't necessary. I mean, you got your big ones. You got Carter. You got, you know, a couple of them that are kind of the earlier rounds. But really, I think they're trying to look at for depth in these visits. Maybe because they didn't get a lot of tape on them, maybe, you know, whatever it may be. But I found that interesting that you could almost feel that they were just kind of going through the what kind of depth do we need at this position? So
can I tell you what jumped out to me when I started looking at this list more in depth?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I think we have talked about a little bit, almost all the offensive linemen they brought in are tackles that are projected to play guard in the NFL. So on one hand, what does that tell us? Well, that fits a pattern that we've seen from Andy Dickerson and the Rams in terms of how they've done their offensive line for guards. They like movers. They like tackles that play that position. DeJuan Jones is the one aberration there.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that, again, we talk about variance. He's some places he's a first round pick, some places he's a second. But if he goes to the Seahawks, it's hard to see him playing 6'8", 375 at a guard position. He's not a mover, and they like movers at guard. So he'd mean that Abe Lucas would shift to guard. But the point is, all of that, Dana, all of that points to the fact that despite what people thought when Phil Haynes signed his deal and like, oh, they're not looking for guard. They feel like they're – no, they're absolutely looking for a guard. They're like, that's an open position now. And so I think that that's great news. It's really, really good news because they could have just thought, Phil Haynes started most of the year. He's fine.
He'll be fine. Yeah.
They are going to bring in competition. So that's awesome. So that's one thing. Two, the thing that jumped out to me, and we've been asking about this, the Seahawks have not drafted ever a nose tackle. And I'm talking about a 3-4 nose tackle. And really, you could argue they really haven't drafted ever a true run-stuffing nose tackle in all the Schneider's history. But what you see with Robert Cooper from Florida State, this guy is 6'2", 335 pounds. Okay? when you talk about, I think his name's Avery. I want to bring him back up. Calvin Avery.
Calvin Avery from Illinois.
6'2", 345 pounds. I don't need to know anything about them on the field. What their measurements tell me, Dana, is guess what? The Seahawks are playing their 3-4 next year. I don't care what anyone says. The only reason you look at guys 335, 345 is because you're playing 3-4 and you're plugging a nose tackle in the middle. Mm-hmm. So that does mean that guys like Siaki Ika, that guys like Mazi Smith are on their radar. It doesn't mean that the Seahawks will take them in the first round or the second round. And it might mean that they're looking at these guys. Cameron Young's another guy later. They might be looking at these guys as undrafted free agents that would fit. But that, from a scheme perspective, is really telling, because then that means if they're going to be 3-4 and they're going to have that nose tackle, it does mean they're looking for 3-4 defensive ends. And so that, a lot of things that come out of that. I think the Charlie Jones thing was great. I just told you, like, it means they're looking for that type of receiver. Mm-hmm. I think that's good to know. And the other things, the two other things I'll just say, they brought in a fair number of cornerbacks and safeties. Safety is interesting because they've got plenty, but they're looking at safety. They're looking at strong safeties, box kind of safeties, and they've looked at some others. But the fact that they're looking at corners like Ringo and stuff like that, that's a sign that they do see that as a place. They could decide that they had Trey Brown and they've got Kobe Bryant and they got Michael Jackson and they've got Tariq Woolen and we don't really need a corner. They're looking at corners. So this idea that they might really like Devin Witherspoon may not be totally crazy. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that jumped out is from a linebacker perspective. I think Trenton Simpson, he's an early round guy. And the fact that they're looking at him is good news. I think he's a good fit for them. I think you look at Nick Herbig. He's another guy who is a mover. He's generally actually played defensive end. He's been like a pass rusher. But he really, like, size wise, he's more of a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's like, but he could potentially be an off ball linebacker for them. And so what does it all mean, Dana? It means that the things that we've been talking about as needs, and they brought in a center. Okay. That was
another one. Jake Andrews.
Right. So they brought in guards, center, linebacker, slot receiver, corner, you know, edge, defensive lineman, and nose tackle. These are the things we've been saying that they need. Mm-hmm. It's a sign that they see the same needs. So I think that's it's a very telling list of who they've brought in so far.
Well, I mean, the holes were pretty blatant at this point, right? Like we all knew exactly where the holes were. And I think that that's, you know, what they're looking at. And, you know, to me, this also feels a little bit like, well, we're going to trade back and have extra picks later. And so maybe that could be in there a little bit. I think it just kind of depends. So I think it'll be fun, but I will tell you that from everything that I have read, because like I said, I have said this a million times, you know, I don't watch a ton of college ball. So I just started to read about them after, you know, during the draft season, that a lot of these guys on the list, you see people say, oh yeah, that would fit the Seahawks model. And so I think that that's probably pretty good. You hear good things about them. So, all right. If we do not get to these Patreon questions, we're going to be here all night. All right. So let's go ahead and get started. Okay. Once again, everyone, Brian Spiel, go to patreon.com/hawkblocker. Make sure you join, you get into the Slack group, and then you get to ask us these fun questions. All right. So we're going to start with, this one was interesting. It's from Faz. It says, would you guys be open to a Frank Clark reunion if the cap space situation changes?
You answer that one, Dana. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know that I would. So I live here in Kansas City. I've watched a lot of Frank Clark play lately, and he looks really good. Most of the time, I don't know that he'll be worth the money. I think he's going to hold out for a lot of money. I don't know whether or not he'll get it, but coming off a championship team never hurts, right? And their defense did look better last year. But I just don't think that would be very high on my priority list.
Yeah, I think he's an odd fit for them. Frank Clark is more of a true 4-3 defensive end. I don't see him being able to do what Uchenna Nwosu does and drop into coverage and play in space in the same way. So I don't think he fits with what the Seahawks need.
No. I mean, and they got rid of him for a reason, kind of. So, all right. This one is also from Faz. It's his second question. It says, what are your guys' thoughts on the rumors that Jeff Bezos is interested in buying the Seahawks? Okay, first I want to say, are you kidding me with $6 billion for the stinking Commanders? Like, I was just, I read that and I was like, oh God, it just makes me nauseous.
Dana, this is a lesson. I mean, this is how this is how kids now learn lessons, that if you are a terrible, terrible human being that does awful things,
you get to make billions of dollars.
To make millions and millions of dollars. Yeah. That's your punishment.
Oh, God, it just made me nauseous. Absolutely nauseous. I don't have a problem. Although I don't know. I think that Jody Allen's doing just a fine job running it right now. I wish I could get 12 up. So that's cute. I think she's doing a fine job. But if she decides to sell it, I don't really have a problem with Jeff. I mean, I don't love him as a human, but he's got a lot of money. So
I care about the Seahawks. I care about the Seahawks being good. And like, if you're going to tell me that we get to have an owner who has a lot of disposable income to pour in, who also has local connections,
then why not?
I'm good. And also happens to have built some, you know, a lot of pretty impressive things. I think that could help. So yeah, bring it on. I'd be all for it.
All right. Imani, does the shroud around Seattle's decision at number 5 leave you more excited or nervous as a fan?
How about
Brian's never excited. He's always nervous.
I told you to start the show. I am so excited. It's so nice, Dana, because for a few years, it just wasn't that fun to be a Seahawks fan. It was really just like, we do this for charity. I don't want to stop doing it, but it also is just not that enjoyable, to be totally honest. I didn't feel good about the team. I wasn't excited about the players. I wasn't that excited about Russell. I didn't enjoy the fan base and how it was split and all that stuff. I am excited now. So I think for this fifth pick, it does give me some heartburn.
So it makes him nervous.
The most positive way I could put it is the Seahawks are not going to be, unless they pass on Jalen Carter, they are not going to be in a situation like my Blazers have been, where they've had a top pick and passed off on Michael Jordan or passed on Sam Bowie, or sorry, passed on Kevin Durant. Because really, other teams are going to be making choices ahead of them. So it's going to be a pretty straightforward selection unless they decide that Jalen Carter is a guy they can't draft. And at that point, it will be a little stressful, I will say.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to be excited until the name Will Anderson is read before number 5. And then I'm going to be like, oh crap, now what? So a little while, I'll have to wait and see what happens, but all right. Let's see. This is from Derek. Question for Brian. Does the Players Tribune article from Anthony Richardson make you more inclined to root for him to be drafted by the Seahawks instead of a defensive player?
I have nothing against Anthony Richardson as a person. I think he seems like a great guy. I read the article, and the short answer is no, doesn't really change anything for me. I think some of the things he called out in there of like, hey, I read what people say, I know this. I will ask people, go watch him even in the combine with no one around. Not throw the deep balls. That's what everyone focuses on. Watch him try to throw the fade pattern to receivers who are like 10 yards away. He throws those a million miles an hour. Like he has no touch on that whatsoever. That's like Trey Lance. Like Trey Lance is a guy that had a lot of athletic talent, didn't have as much experience playing football, starting at least. And we laugh at the 49ers that they've been stuck with him. They got super lucky with Brock Purdy, but I just think people are getting super, super caught up with the athleticism and missing the fact that from a on-field perspective, he had flashes, but for a lot of it, he was you know, he threw a lot of picks. Forget the accuracy thing, like, which also is a bigger problem than people want to admit. I think there's a lot of work to do there. Mm-hmm. And that is just way more risk than I'm ready for right now at that particular position. If you draft Jalen Carter and he's no good, they're not going to stick with him for 4 years to find another defensive mm-hmm. tackle.
So look at it this way here. I have said, I really don't want a quarterback at five, and that's, I mean, just kind of because my preference, but if for some weird reason, Richardson is sitting there at 20, I would be totally okay with him grabbing him at 20, just not five. So I mean, I would be okay with that. I think that he can be cultivated a little bit if the talent level is there, but he's only had 13 starts. So we don't really know, you know? And so there's a lot of question marks. I agree. That makes me nervous.
I know people get annoyed about it. We've talked about it. And I see people in the chat talking about, well, what about Josh Allen? And Josh Allen has accuracy fixed. That's like saying, well, just Drew Locke's going to be the next Geno Smith. These things don't happen. Wait, all
there
the
are
time.
People who think that, so don't start that.
They absolutely do, but that's not how this works. Just because it happens once in 30 years doesn't mean that then it's going to happen again, like right away. That's actually like much less likely to happen again. So the Josh Allen transformation was very unlikely. It happened and it worked. I happen to be a Josh Allen fan coming out, so I was happy about that. But in any event, you cannot just assume that now all of a sudden it's easy to fix accuracy mm-hmm. because it happened with one guy.
Yeah. Doesn't mean it won't happen. You just don't know. And that's the question mark. And he's going to go too high for that question mark for my stomach to handle for sure. So we talked about this a little bit. This is from Eric, but is there a situation where you think it would make sense to draft a tackle and move Lucas inside, or should the Seahawks be looking strictly for guard and center? I know we kind of answered that already, that you think that they should look for guard and center.
I'd rather them get a great guard and keep Lucas where he is, but I'm open to it. I just want them to improve two spots on the offensive line instead of just one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tony in Montana, he says, there has been a lot of talk about trading Fant. Most involves clearing cap space. Would you consider trading Fant for Devon White if the salary could be figured out? This add strength to an area where the Hawks need multiple players.
What's your thought?
I really don't have a problem trading Fant. I mean, I don't dislike Fant as much as some other people do. I think he's fine. I think he was serviceable. I think he made some really nice catches last year. And so maybe with another year under him, he could really, you know, get it rolling. But at the same time, this is a very talented tight end class. And so you could get a rookie tight end maybe to do the same thing. I just think that when you start trading for some of these players, the salary cap is already super tight. I don't know, unless they just were to start dumping other players, which I don't think that's really something, I know it's not something I want. And I know exactly, you know who I'm talking about, but I really don't know that could be worked. If it could be worked out, I mean, sure. I'm fine with trading Fan.
Yeah. No problems here.
Yeah. All right. Brendan Light, after he is drafted at five, which color, sorry, I should have read this before. Which color are you buying the Anthony Richardson jersey, in action green or the throwback? Sorry, I should have read that prior.
I will say, if they draft, if they call a name Anthony Richardson in 2 weeks, you will not see a D Eskridge face from me. You will not hear me giving an F grade. Mm-hmm. So it's not that level. It's not the pick I want.
Right. All right. So this is from Jason. Question two, if I get one. Yeah, you can have a second question. That's it. Let's see. Oh, wait, here's his first one. Okay, I'm sorry. Which Seahawks on expiring deals are back in 2024? Nwosu, Fant, Daryl Taylor, Damian Lewis, or Phil Haynes?
Is that an or can there be multiple?
No, I think you could pick all of them if you wanted. Yeah.
So Nwosu seems likely. I think.
Yeah, I hope so.
Lewis is a question mark. That'll depend on how Phil Haynes plays and what they get at mm-hmm. guard this year, because there might be a cheaper option that is doing well. I don't think Fant's going to be back, most likely. And then who were the other folks?
Daryl Taylor.
That one's fascinating, Dana. Mm-hmm. People forget that guy had like 9.5 sacks last year. And what really I thought he played great. Year, mm-hmm. But he stunk against the run. He hasn't shown he's a great fit as a 3-4 outside linebacker. Do you get what if he goes like 10 sacks this year? Do you let that walk? That'd be tough, and it would be unlike the Seahawks. So I think he sticks around, but it'll really depend. I mean, he will command a lot of money, and he might not be the best fit for the defense they're running. So
And it depends on who they get this year. I think that's going to be a big, big part of it.
It does.
All right. For Braxton, should Seattle be intrigued by one of the guys in this great tight end class? What do you think a Noah Fant trade would net us in return? Sorry, I didn't read that one prior either. Yeah, I'm very interested in this tight end class. I think that there's a couple of, one or two good ones that'll go early. And I think that that's got some pretty good depth. I don't hate the tight ends we have, though. I think that they're completely functional. I mean, Will Dissly, he has his moments. I think that if you get rid of one of them, of course you should draft one. But I would be okay if they stood pat, but I wouldn't mind them getting another one.
Yeah, same. Yeah. Same. I would be more excited about drafting a quarterback early in this draft and trading Fant than keeping Fant and not drafting a tight end. Sorry. Did I say quarterback?
You did.
Yeah, tight end. Sorry, quarterback on the mind.
All right. So this one's from Jen. It says, do you think John and Pete have learned their lesson from Malik McDowell, LJ Collier, and D. Eskridge? I don't know.
What would be the lesson? Team?
That they're busts. I mean, how do you know that before? You just don't. I mean, Malik had some red flags for sure.
Malik McDowell, D. Eskridge, and who is the other person?
LJ
Collier?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a connective tissue, like a connective thread between those three?
Just that they didn't work out.
Yeah.
They suck, basically. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the the D. Eskridge lesson, like what do you...
Yeah.
If there's anything, maybe that it's a Creed Humphrey lesson, not a D. Eskridge lesson, like that center can be a massively impactful position.
Yeah.
We'll see if they've learned that lesson. I have a feeling they might've learned that lesson, but we'll see.
God, I hope so.
The LJ Collier one, that one is interesting, Dana, because mm-hmm. I mean, I wrote about this in the article I shared this week, which is on Schneider's draft history, all the positions he's ever picked in what rounds mm-hmm. And his tendencies. They've been open about this. They've had this tendency where if there's a position group that is a little bit thinner and they have a need at that position, they will kind of overdraft there. Like mm-hmm. LJ Collier was the last guy that they kind of liked in the defensive line. There'd been a little bit of a run at that point in that year. So they drafted him higher than they wanted and they left more talented players that had better grades on their board for other teams. And I think it's the panic pick.
I think they've learned
that lesson maybe because last year they didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And so that would be my best hope that maybe they've learned the LJ Collier lesson of all those things.
Yeah. It's the panic pick. And you see that all the time in the draft where they'll mm-hmm. start to be a run and other teams are like, oh, and so then they'll follow suit. And so, yeah, but smart teams don't do that. So hopefully they figured that out. All right. So this is from Gar. There's a chance one or both picks 5 or 20 could be traded and more picks acquired. Would you be opposed to trading back into the end of the first round for a quarterback if we didn't take one already? Mm-hmm. And already if one of Richardson, Levis, or Hooker are there.
So what I'm hearing in the question is assume that we have 1 and 20 and then we potentially trade from 37 up into the first round. I think mm-hmm. that's what the question is. And there's actually a mock draft out there that has the Seahawks doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it would mean trading both second round picks. So 37 and 52 to get up into like the late first round. I'm not excited about that. I am more excited about having more, like, I think the strength of this draft is 1 through 4, maybe to 5, depending on how you feel about Jalen Carter. And then it is really like 15 through 60, 55.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
So many good picks there.
I don't want to give up more bites at the apple. I want a center. I want a guard. I want a slot receiver. I want a good linebacker. I'm okay if they don't draft a quarterback until later. I think that that would be my preference.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this as a side note from that. So let's say they stick at 20. Are you going to be mad if they take one of the centers at 20?
No.
Maybe. Someone asked me that today on Twitter and I was like, absolutely not. Especially if it's Jacob Jingleheimer Schmidt. Like, come on, you know? Yeah. I think it would be so good. And yes, yeah. If he ends up in Seattle. That'll be his name. Sorry guys.
That's yes.
Just, yeah. All right. Let's see. Ooh, this is from Nick. Would the Seahawks be better off acquiring Burns from the Panthers to pair with Draymond or drafting a promising edge prospect?
Draft.
Yeah.
Draft. Do not trade for veterans that you have to pay a lot of money for. I've heard Chase Young. People want to know about, should we go get Chase Young from the Commanders? No.
Stay young and cheap, people. Young and cheap. All right. Let's see. Oh. This breaks my heart, but I want your answer, Brian. Okay, it's from Sean. What compensation would you need to trade Tyler Lockett?
I was someone who was talking about this going into this year. I mean, Tyler's turning 30. He's at the top of his game. This is the point where you could potentially still get meaningful value for him in return. I think I saw a tweet today that I retweeted that he's the only player in the NFL that's had at least 8 touchdowns receiving in the last 5 years straight or something like that. I mean, this is a really good player. I love Tyler Lockett. None of this is about that. But similar to the Bobby Wagner situation, there was a point where they could have traded him for significant return and spent less money on him and then built back up. They waited too long. He had no value. They had to cut him. Now you're going to have Tyler Lockett turning 31 in a little, like a year from now or whatever. And he's going to be making $24 million a year, $23 million. Like, it starts to get harder to justify that, no matter how you feel about him, just from a cap situation, from a roster management, I think it's the right time to be thinking about it. So it depends on if you get a receiver in this draft, like a Zay Flowers, who is like Tyler Lockett. Then I think you could potentially, I don't know what you'd get for him. I don't think a third rounder is out of the question, but I don't think you get much more than that, probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though the wide receiver class is so thin this year?
You never know, but like you look at the guys that are getting like the trades that are out there. It seems weird, Dan. I mean, like DeAndre Hopkins gets traded when he's young and amazing, and he gets traded for not that much.
That's fair.
So it's just hard to predict. And Tyler's old enough, and I think he's underappreciated. So I don't know that he'd be a guy that I'd expect much more than a third.
Yeah, it's fair. All right, a couple more questions. So this one's from Sam. Does drafting Anderson or Carter change where other players on our roster will play position-wise, i.e. Dre Jones playing edge if we draft Carter, or a three tech if we draft Anderson?
Does drafting Anderson change what? I didn't hear that.
It says Dre Jones playing edge if we draft Carter, and then they have or three tech if we draft Anderson.
I see. So they're talking about where Draymond Jones is going to play based on whether we draft Anderson or Carter. I think that Draymond Jones is a 3-4 end one way or another. And if you're talking about three technique, five technique, all those pieces, right. I think that's a little bit too early to say. He's really a classic three technique kind of player. He's off the guard, you know, shaded off one of those guys, and you just want him up there disrupting. Carter, he also profiles potentially as a 3-4 end, but he could also be a penetrating nose tackle depending on how you want to play him. So he can play all over the line. And Anderson is very much a 3-4 outside linebacker in our defense. He's not a defensive lineman. So I don't think he really will affect the Draymond Jones situation much.
Yeah. So maybe it's possible if it's Carter, but not for Anderson.
Okay.
Let's see. This one's from Adam. It says lots of serious people have Wilson above Anderson. There is no nightmare scenario, right? Carter, Anderson, Wilson, or Richardson will be there. Maybe all four. We should probably just trust JC, right? I think John Snyder is what it means. So yeah, maybe we'll see. All right. So this last question is from Katie. She says, I'm holed up at home with COVID. Poor Katie.
Oh, Katie, sorry. Says,
What's a great Seahawks game I should pull from the archives and watch? A victory would be preferable. I mean, I already feel crappy enough. My favorite go-to game that I will pull out and watch is usually the Green Bay NFC Championship game, because that game was such a disaster and turned out so well. I will usually watch the San Francisco NFC Championship game yep. to also. But this year I was home and I had a cold one day and I pulled out that Denver game. It just really made me happy from the beginning of the season. So that's what I would do. What ones do you like to watch, Brian?
Those are all great.
Yeah.
I'd throw out from this year, I think the Detroit game was a pretty fun game mm-hmm. to watch. A lot of a lot of action. I would put some of the older ones. I'd put the Seahawks against the Steelers. I think it was like 2015 maybe, where it was Roethlisberger against Russ, and they just went crazy and they ended up winning with the Doug Baldwin play at the end, or mm-hmm. like they put it away. I think there was also, depending on if you can stomach it, the Seahawks where they were going against Deshaun Watson and the Texans, mm-hmm. and there was a big shootout in Seattle. And then the other one I would always throw out there, another Houston one, as a matter of fact, was the 2013 comeback yep. where Sherman loses his shoe in overtime.
I was at that game. It was a great game. Oh my God.
What a great game that was. So fun. So yeah, that was a lot yep. of fun.
Yeah, that is a fun game to watch for sure. So, all right. Ooh. All right. Jeff says, based on the last draft, Pete lost overall power during the draft.
Well, want to thank Jeff for the super chat.
Yes, thank you, Jeff.
Appreciate always the support. And we will do our best, as long as they're appropriate, to put those up on the screen for other people to see and read as well.
Thank you, Jeff. That's awesome.
Yeah. So Dana, is that it? Did we get through all the papers?
That's all of them. Yes. Poor Katie was last with her COVID thing. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. How are you feeling? Where's your head at?
I'm excited because there's lots of, and I will get burned for this. I'm prepared for that. There's lots of ways that this could go really right for Seattle. Yeah. There's lots of ways. And so I think the instant reaction will be yay or boo. But I think once all the dust settles and you actually look at these people that they've drafted, and unless they reach huge, which I just don't feel, I think they're not in that headspace right now to reach for these players. I think we're going to let the dust settle, and it's going to be another really good draft. They have so many picks. They have so many, you know, in the first two rounds, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Twitter, keep it fun.
I'm right there with you. Yeah. And I would just say, I don't know if you do this at all. I spend some time thinking about how our rivals are thinking about this, because San Francisco is sitting there with no first round picks, no second round picks.
They can twiddle their thumbs for 2 days.
And they're like, those 49ers fans, they know the Seahawks got better last year. They know it. And they know that the Seahawks have the second most draft capital of any team in this draft after the Texans. And I think if I was a 49ers fan, I would be hoping that they don't draft Jalen Carter, because I would be sitting there thinking, man, if he ends up being as good as people say, they're going to close the gap with us significantly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a position where I would feel concerned. I think Will Anderson would give me some concern as well, just because he's very likely to be a good player. He may not be great. He may not be Von Miller, but he's very likely to be a good player.
Mm-hmm.
And if they drafted a quarterback, I don't think I'd be worried about it, but I'd also probably not love that. I think it's when you talk about guys like Tyree Wilson, or you talk about guys like even Witherspoon, or like some of these small, like either players that don't have the same upside, players that maybe are smaller and are not like that, they're not going to physically change the game.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't think I'd be as worried if I was a 49ers fan. Like, sure, draft a receiver.
Have a good time with that.
we'll push you around.
Right. I have a lot of 49ers fans on my feed, because I do cover that one too for Our Turf. And the same conversation has been going on since the end of the season. It's all about their quarterback. And Grant Cohen put it out today. He goes, the 49ers don't have a quarterback. We have a quarterback room. It's like they have like by committee, basically. And I think that that is so on their minds. You know, it's really interesting where we're at this year compared to last year when you look at this division. Because last year, Seattle was the butt of the jokes, right? They were like, oh my God, you're going to have Geno Smith as your quarterback. It's just so sad, blah, blah, blah. You guys suck, whatever. And San Francisco was going to rule the world with Trey Lance, and you have the Rams that were so dominant. And then, of course, Cliff Kingsbury was going to figure it out, whatever. We knew that wouldn't happen. But you look at it this year, two teams are complete disasters. The Rams and the Cardinals are a disaster. They are dumpster mm-hmm. fires. I don't mm-hmm. know what is going to happen there. San Francisco is still a really good team, but they have this mm-hmm. huge question mark that's just like looming over their head with their quarterback. And they did pick up a couple great players, but they lost some good players too. I feel like, and I, this is not me being a homer, at least I hope it's not, Seattle almost feels the most stable right now, which is a little weird. San Francisco is, as of right now, the more talented team, but I think that Seattle just feels the most stable as long as they hit this draft. So I don't know. It's a weird place to be.
I think that's well said. I don't know if I'd describe it in the same way, but I think the quarterback position is a good example of that. We don't know what Brock Purdy's, how he's going to come off this injury, or if it's mm-hmm. going to be in the same time frame. They say Trey Lance is certainly not proven. That's a big question mark. That team did not start that season very well because they were getting, you know, middling quarterback play. And anyway, so I agree there. The thing I'll leave with, Dana, and don't want to keep you all night, but if you go back to that playoff game, the Seahawks against the 49ers, mm-hmm. and you go back to that first half where things were actually going well,
mm-hmm.
what were the Seahawks doing well in that first half? They were running the ball effectively. It wasn't that their defense played remarkably well. In fact, Tariq Woolen and Kobe Bryant were struggling mightily. Mm-hmm. They couldn't cover guys. Like, some of the things you were hoping would be good were not. But the Seahawks were controlling the ball with the run game. And so I think there's a case to be made that if they add a good center, a powerful center, and they add a good guard, and they get physical up front, that might be the best, like, probability bet to make.
Mm-hmm.
They could really stick with the 49ers, even more so than improving the defense, which you all know. I think that the Seahawks could end up being more of a thorn in their side if they get a center and a guard and really have a great offensive line for the next 4 years. If you can negate the 49ers defensive line and how great that is, mm-hmm. I think the 49ers are a much different team.
Yeah. So. It's going to be fun. It feels like it'll be fun again because, you know, it was always fun when we beat them, but it was always fun when it was competitive. That was my favorite, you know, that team to beat, but I also like them when they're really good games. And so that'll be fun. I think it'll be good.
Well, Dana, this has been fun. I appreciate you guiding us through. It's been fun to just be a little bit of a duo tonight, talk through all this stuff. And I cannot believe we are 2 weeks away. A week from now, I will be actually probably just leaving now. I will be spending the evening with John Schneider and Tracy Snyder and Pete and some other folks. I will make sure that they tell me everything that we need to know about the draft. I'm sure they will share. And then 2 weeks from now, a week after that, you will be at the draft. We will be hosting our draft party. For folks that haven't been paying attention, we are going to be doing a live draft show for the entire first round. And we're going to start before the first round. That's a lot of time on air, but we're going to be on air. Dana's going to be at the draft, so she won't be on it, but we will have Evan. We will have Jeff. We will have Nathan, and you will see our reactions. If you have not watched us watch the draft before, you will want to tune in. I think some of our best shows have been immediate reactions to draft picks. There's no revisionist history because it's forever recorded and on YouTube. You can see exactly how we reacted to the DS Gridge pick. You can see exactly how we reacted to the LJ Collier pick, I think. I don't know if that one's on, but in any event, you'll see all those things. And man, there's some memorable moments. So there are going to be memorable moments. We are going to be losing our minds. Be there 2 weeks from today. Watch it with us. It will be so much fun. Until then, please go ahead, hit the like button. Come on, folks. Appreciate that. Hit subscribe so you know when the shows are going live. And then go over to patreon.com/hawkblogger. Get immediate access to the Slack channel. Join there. Dana's there all the time having good conversations. Great conversations going on around the clock with people that absolutely think the Seahawks should draft Anthony Richardson and draft quarterbacks. So you don't just have to listen to my perspective or Dana's perspective. You can get other Seahawks fans, and they're all good folks. We intentionally keep it to friendly folks, and we ask people that aren't friendly to kindly go elsewhere. So better than Twitter, in my opinion. Great information. Patreon.com/hawkblogger. Join now, because this is a community you're going to want to be part of for the next few years as the Seahawks really start to rise up. Until then, by the way, there's also a Mariners channel in there. You talk about Jared Kelnick and all the great things he's doing. I think there's a Kraken channel, although I'm not in it. Anyway, have a wonderful evening, everybody. Thank you to Dana O'Gorman at Dana OG on Twitter. You'll find her there. Until then, go Hawks and good night.